It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning. Welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford. I'm your co-host this morning, and I'm delighted to welcome as our guest co-host, Tony Bernetti, President and CEO of the Federal Employee Defense Services. Tony, welcome. It's good to have you on Fed Talk be here with our guest, John Adler.
Well, good morning. I'm happy to be here.
And John, of course, is the president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, and he's going to talk to us about FLEOA and its legislative agenda. John, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thanks, Bill. Great to see you guys.
It's good to have you back. John is a regular on Fed Talk. And tell us just a little bit to get started, so our listeners that may have never heard of FLEOA. And I would just say FLEOA is, I think, one of the most visible, most active, and largest federal employee associations out there. And John, it's good to have you as president of it. Tell us a little bit about what FLEOA does.
That endorsement, Bill, you hired. we tout ourselves as the voice of federal law enforcement. We are the largest nonprofit, nonpartisan professional association that exclusively represents federal law enforcement officers across the country. We have about approximately 26,000 members that come from 65 different federal agencies. And we provide our members with legal service, legal counsel. We have chapters across the country which engage in a variety of charitable and social activities to further the mission of law enforcement, as well as those charitable events we get involved in, such as National Missing Children's Day. And we also interact with certain legislative committees on behalf of our members, and we attempt to encourage the membership to help us educate members of Congress on matters in which they seem to be fumbling the ball, such as the series of legislative attacks on our pay and benefits.
They fumble the ball occasionally, John?
Well, you know, that would suggest they even have their fingers on the ball in the first place. So, yeah, you're right. It's probably not even accurate to say that.
Okay, just a reminder to our listeners that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. John, tell us just a little bit about some of the major legislative things you're working on.
Well, one of the main things, Bill and Tony, that has sort of been occupying our time, it's impacting the entire federal government workforce, are the series of legislative attacks targeting our pay and benefits. And the membership, myself personally, we're absolutely outraged over the profound ignorance of our Congress to think that by attacking our pensions, what do I really feel?
Do you have an opinion on this, John?
Yeah. I don't have a dog. I have a pack in this fight. To think that somehow increasing the percentage that we contribute to our pension or to freeze our pay from two now to a proposed 5 years is somehow going to affect, you know, the budget or solve the economic woes of this country while everyone conveniently ignores the amount of money we throw out in foreign aid. It's just mind-boggling. So what we want to do is we want to sort of attempt to educate members of Congress, and I know that sounds funny, to recognize law enforcement similar to the way they address the military, which is fund us in the budget as mandatory security funding. Don't have us a feather on a duck in a barrel as discretionary. It's very naive to think that the domestic guardians who provide and defend, will defend this country and provide the freedoms we all enjoy, are somehow discretionary. So I think they're taking a very fatal blind eye to the manner in which they fund federal law enforcement, and also the series of attacks on our pay and benefit. You know, we understand the concept of sacrifice. There is a National Law Enforcement Memorial here in Washington, D.C., which evidences that sacrifice and has the names of all the brave men and women who made the ultimate sacrifice and died in the line of duty. And every day when attrition increases and there are hiring freezes, we endure that in a way that's very unique and different from the rest of the workforce. It means there are less of us to go out there. It increases our risk. And this year alone, 9 federal officers have died in the line of duty. So by virtue of attrition and hiring freezes, we're going out there, our caseloads increase, which we don't mind, but we're bearing a greater risk to our safety. And I think that it's important members of Congress understand that and understand the impact it has on all of us.
Well, it seems like you're also causing a greater risk to the public at large.
Absolutely.
You have a mission.
Yes, we do.
And And when you're not funded, you can't do that mission as well.
You can't, right. And I mean, just some of the vital things that not to lose sight over. I mean, pursuing those who are suspected to have or engage in terrorist activities, violent felons, fugitives, those associated with gangs or the cartels. I mean, this is an absolute priority for us. And in light of the, you know, the fortuitous event of OBL's demise, we have to even be more vigilant and more prepared and ready to defend against any attacks in the homeland. And cutting our ranks and cutting our pay is the wrong way to go.
John, let me ask in first, just for our listeners to set the stage a little bit. What we're talking about is the administration president, his administration has frozen federal employee pay. That means no pay raises. And that is applying across the board without regard to agency and position. The military, however, has always been excluded from that, as you point out, the mandatory security designation. Is there any history for this? Has this ever been done before? Has, you know, law enforcement ever been lumped in, you know, either with the military or separated out and given this mandatory security designation?
During my tenure with FLIOA, Tony, now, and I've been on the board for 8+ years, I'm not aware of us ever being sort of classified in the same manner, the mandatory security manner, by way of a budget. I mean, I think it's one of those things where sometimes, you know, while we recognize the heroic work of our soldiers serving abroad and combating our enemies abroad, there is sort of a very fatal degree of complacency here to understand and appreciate those who are defending the goal, which is our country here, the homeland. But I'm not aware, Tony, just again coming back to your question, of this having been done in the past. I think it's obviously long overdue, and it needs to be done, and there needs to be the proper recognition of the services being provided by those domestic law enforcement officers. And it's not just federal, it's state and local as well.
Well, and as we embark upon the 10-year anniversary of September 11, 2001, everything's changed. I mean, if we learned anything during this last decade is, you know, everything, the way we, you know, we approached the way the federal government, you know, does business, you know, it is all about national security. You know, even, you know, when we do, we're doing things domestically, you know, fighting the domestic crimes, everything is sort of done, you know, with the eye on the ball, you know, and the ball is, you know, national security, you know, because 9/11, you know, for me, for, you know, a lot of us was a huge wake up call. So it's all about, you know, national security now. And you have, you know, civilian folks, you know, working side by side, civilian federal employees working side by side with military, you know, personnel, you know, often doing same or similar jobs. So, you know, it seems like there's, you know, at least some, you know, precedent is not the right word, but, you know, I can see that there should be a desire to at least take a look at this and create some dialogue. Often, you know, when you have a pay freeze like this, you know, it comes down to a simplistic type argument. It's just dollars and cents, you know, or maybe no cents, you would say.
Right, very good. No, Tony, I absolutely agree. And just as an example, you know, the DEA has been doing phenomenal work working with our military components in Afghanistan. And you're right, we have become more integrated because of our dual missions. You know, it's very simplistic to view those who wish to do harm to our country or bring illegal products here as simply either a matter for the military or a matter for law enforcement. There is definitely sort of this integrated mission here. And you're absolutely right. I mean, it just what it requires is somebody to take pause and actually think and not just sort of move forward on autopilot in a very simplistic, naive manner, both in the administration and on the Hill.
John, how would it work? If you're mandatory security versus discretionary, which is current, what difference would that make for law enforcement officers in their day-to-day jobs?
First, you know, very good question, Bill. What it does is it prioritizes or it establishes us as a priority funding mechanism for the Congress. So when the budget is put forth, and for instance, in this case, the military has received for this year a 1.4% annual pay increase. But in addition to the pay increase which impacts obviously the pay and benefits of those providing the service, The funding part of it provides the priority so that, you know, when you're sort of dishing out the crumbs, who gets the big crumbs and who gets the little ones? Well, we recognize, our Congress recognizes the priority, the mandatory security priority of what our military does within the Department of Defense. So, again, when we're allocating, when we cut up that sort of revenue pie, the greatest slice goes to those who fall under mandatory security. And what we're saying is, we're, again, as I refer to us as a feather on the duck in an increasingly small barrel, we're being overlooked. And what that ultimately comes down to is, if the agencies don't receive the proper funding, whether it's the Marshal Service, FBI, Secret Service, or any of our IG communities or our land management agencies, they simply don't have the money for the training, they don't have the money for equipment, and obviously personnel reductions cause many problems. We can't do our job effectively and we get hurt. So by shifting us to mandatory security funding, it would help to ensure that we do receive the federal funding to make sure we can carry out our mission safely and effectively.
You're listening to John Adler, president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. This is Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I am Tony Vernetti, and I'm here with my co-host, Bill Bransford, and today we have John Adler, the president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, to discuss the latest legislative and other big picture issues that are facing federal law enforcement officers across the land. John, when we took our break, we were talking about the pay freeze and how that's gonna impact law enforcement. I want to ask you, you know, other than just, you know, saying we don't want the pay freeze to apply to us, are there any, you know, alternatives, you know, that you would propose to the members of Congress?
We are currently working on a legislative proposal that put forth the concept of having a virtual annual pay increase for federal law enforcement. During the year, there is a current pay freeze in which the federal law enforcement officer is facing mandatory retirement. So the purpose of this would be to allow them that virtual pay increase to increase their high three salary years for their retirement annuity. And the reason for this is that federal law enforcement officers under the 6C retirement system face mandatory retirement at age 57. So during a pay freeze year or a series of years, as we're now facing, we don't have the ability to ride out the financial storm when we reach that age. So I think it's only fair and equitable to allow federal law enforcement officers confronted with mandatory retirement to receive a virtual pay increase for the purpose of increasing their high three, which would ultimately have a positive impact on their retirement annuity.
And how would you determine the percentage of that increase, John?
I think, you know, Bill, going back to the comparison to the military, what I would recommend, what we are recommending, is that we use the same percentage that the military is receiving during the year in which we're experiencing a pay freeze and they're not. And for example, this year it would be 1.4%. Now, obviously, it doesn't create a financial bonanza for the federal law enforcement officer retiring, but it's a balance of in this economy, every penny counts, but it's also the principle of it.
And I think we probably didn't touch on this enough. The overall concern is more than, you know, the me attitude, the greedy me attitude. I'm not getting my increase. You know, that's not fair. You know, we would call that, you know, whining. And I think the administration would say, look, we're in a, we're we're in a tough situation here. Debt ceiling, all this, everybody has got to bear, you know, a little bit of the burden here. But I think what your organization is trying to say, at what cost? And, you know, and I think that's the message. You're going to have, I mean, you're going to have seasoned, you know, qualified law enforcement officers leaving as soon as they're eligible, you know, for retirement. They're not going to, you know, stick around. You're going to have, you know, what Bill would call the human capital crisis happening, the brain drain. And
especially if people retire.
Right.
And law enforcement, and you said, John, mandatory retirement at 57, but can retire at age 50.
Age 50, 20 years of service.
There's a large group of federal law enforcement officers who stay from age 50 to 57 who might leave early.
Right.
With the pay freeze and the cutback on benefits, especially if you see something like a change in the retirement calculation from high three to high
right.
five.
And that's very important. These are your career leaders. These are the right. people who have been in the agency 20 plus years. These are your special agents in charge. These are your deputy assistant directors. Right. You know, these are your ADs. These are the people, you know, that are, you know, that have been in the trenches year in and year out. You know, that know how the agency runs, you know, that can take the direction from the political folks and implement it, you know, in the best way with their experience. And that's the real fear, is that you're gonna lose that.
Right. No, you're absolutely right, Tony. Again, you know, and you look at any agency as an example. Look at the Marshals Service and their incredible mission. And unfortunately, we've lost four this year. We've lost several task force officers as well. And they're out there pursuing the worst of the worst in the fugitive task forces. And, you know, how can we, you know, in good faith, allow an agency like that to have any reduction in their ranks or resources? And anybody, you know, working there, and, you know, you're sort of, we're tired. We suffer more stress from Fox News and CNN headlines than we do fighting the bad guys. And it's because we have to be, you know, we wake up every morning and have our Cheerios and our Flintstone chewable. And next thing you know, there's another negative headline talking about how we're going to have to pay more into our pension. So, yeah, I think it's very dispiriting, and the attrition is certainly, as I've said before, going to impact us in a way with dire consequences more so than any other component within the government.
John, an issue that's really concerned federal law enforcement, it's gotten a lot of press lately, is the gun trafficking, especially with the drug cartels in Mexico, involving alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, and a couple of other agencies. I would imagine you've got a couple of FLIOA members that are connected with that.
Yeah, it's a very sensitive topic, Bill. You know, I find it very disconcerting the manner in which this whole thing is being handled. You know, and we sort of all sit back and we watch the hearings and read the news articles and we question, is the core problem really being addressed? Representative Maloney introduced a bill last Friday, H.R. 2554, called the Stop Gun Trafficking Bill. I think that's a positive approach to this very controversial issue, and what the bill does.
I meant to say it's controversial because the Second Amendment protects citizens' rights to bear arms.
Yes.
And so you know you're talking about a very legal activity.
Yes.
And so that makes it even more difficult.
It's controversial because the NRA is very sensitive to any new gun legislation.
Right. And I think the positive point about this bill, and we recognize that, and we have members who sort of share those views as well, so we have to be careful how we balance that. But this particular bill calls for creating a felony when a person purchases weapons, and you know we can refer to it as a straw buyer, someone who's purchasing you know two or more weapons not for their own personal use, but for bad purposes. But if someone goes ahead and buys two or more weapons and knowingly puts those weapons or sells those weapons to someone that they know is a criminal or is going to engage in criminal activity, that be a felony because they're falsifying the paperwork they file with the gun dealer. I like this bill because it puts the onus on us in federal law enforcement to prove this. And I would think that this would give comfort to the NRA and those who really believe strongly in the Second Amendment that law enforcement has to prove the purchase by the purpose of the weapons being bought is for this purpose. You don't assume it, you have to prove it. And I think, and we are looking to obviously, you know, stop this tremendous flow of weapons going back and forth across the border, you know, and not just Mexico, but other places as well. And we can effectively do this if, you know, everyone seems now, you know, everyone is sort of moving by paralysis by virtue of these hearings. And these hearings are addressing a very serious issue in terms of Fast and Furious. No one really wants to talk about it.
What does Fast and Furious mean to somebody
that references
not been following the hearing?
Yeah, it's Bill. It's an operation that it was run out of the Phoenix ATF office, in which you know, in a sort of general sense, it involved monitoring and surveilling the straw buyers, those buying weapons for other purposes, going to the dealerships, buying weapons, and allowing the weapons to go across the border for the purpose of tracking them, ultimately trying to connect the weapons to the cartels. You know, it's sort of an international take on a buy bust, if you will. It didn't work out perhaps as well as planned, but it blew into a lot of different issues. And currently there are hearings. There have been hearings. There are going to continue to be hearings held by both Senator Grassley and Representative Issa. There are whistleblowers involved. You know, there are agents involved. A lot of allegations have taken place. And ultimately, the whole situation has been referred by the Attorney General to the Department of Justice, Office of Inspector General, to investigate. And what I will say, you know,
And you have members in all of these places.
Yes, I do. Yeah. I have members who are agents involved in the operation, members who are whistleblowers, and we respect,
the IG's office.
Yes,
right.
And we respect all of them. And what the one thing I will insist on in my role, as we sort of carefully balance, you know, statements we make and positions we take, is that there has to be absolute transparency in how this situation is addressed and resolved. We have to ensure public confidence, agent confidence, and congressional confidence that this is being investigated and looked at properly.
You know, and we too, you know, at Feds, the Federal Employee Defense Services, have insured members that are affected as well. And I think just to explain a little bit more detail what a straw purchase is, you know, it involves somebody who can legally purchase a firearm, and they're buying it for the purpose of giving it or selling it to someone who cannot lawfully possess a firearm. Say somebody who's a felon. You know, the example that you're given is the drug cartels. And, you know, in this Fast and Furious case, what they were, you know, what the agency was trying to do, the agents were trying to do, is they were, you know, rather than, you know, just catch the little guy, you know, just, you know, nipping at the heels there, you know, they were trying to get the, you know, who's behind all this, trying to get the big picture stuff. And I think what's lost when you look in at what's going on is, unlike, you know, say, you know, illegal drugs, you know, marijuana, cocaine, guns are legal. Guns aren't contraband. So they have to, you know, either be used illegally or actually fall in possession of somebody in an illegal manner. And that's what Representative Maloney's bill does, is it kind of closes the gap there. It gives law enforcement another tool to get the bad guys. And so, you know, I always get frustrated when we get involved in these Second Amendment debates, you know, when we're trying to, you know, give law enforcement the tools that they need, you know, to protect us. And that's all this law does, is it says, look, if you know that, you know, this person's a, quote, straw purchaser, they're going to do, you know, illegal stuff with that, we could take them down right there.
Right. And I think, Tony, also another point to not lose sight over is the great work that all our members in ATF do every day. They have an extremely important mission, and unfortunately, all of the press surrounding the hearings and the Fast and Furious controversy, you know, they inherit a bad taint. And what I'd like every member of Congress to know is, while this issue gets resolved by virtue of the hearings, please know and respect that they're carrying out a very formidable mission every day.
Well, and it's easy to make the case agents, the scapegoats, the group supervisors, you know, the career employees that are out there in the street running these cases, you know. They're not doing it in a vacuum. They're doing it with the Department of Justice, the United States Attorney's Office there in Phoenix, and they're doing it, you know, with the direction of their leadership. So you're right. I mean, it's one thing to come in and say, we don't like the way this is being done. We should do it differently. Things didn't go the way we had hoped or planned. That's fine. But when you're holding, you know, these officers, you know, accountable for decisions that are made well above their pay grade, that's when I got a real problem.
You know, I agree, Tony. I just want to make sure that the agency as a whole isn't sort of viewed in a negative light. I mean, ATF is still doing outstanding work. And yes, this is important. Yes, we have to resolve the issue with the weapon and whether or not it was used and resulted in the death of Border Patrol agent Brian Terry. That has to get resolved, and it has to get resolved in a way where everyone will have the confidence that it was resolved and investigated properly. But the agency as a whole still deserves the respect for performing a very formidable mission every single day.
Okay, John, as you deal with, you know, you're dealing with some of the funding issues going forward, what about right now with this debt ceiling debate and the uncertainty, you know, 2 weeks from now is possibly the government might default on its obligations. How does that affect federal law enforcement, or do you think it does?
It does, Bill. You know, it's going to have a tremendous impact on our entire country. It's one of those things where, you know, like a tsunami, where we don't necessarily understand the full ripple effect and the impact. It has effect. I mean, it wreaks havoc on our psyche. And what we feel is, as the discussion continues, our interpretation, right, wrong, or otherwise, is that our pay and benefits are being, quote unquote, sold out, while the Gang of Six and the president and or the vice president discuss, you know, different ways to compromise. And we think that compromise is a wrong word. It's a sellout. It's not a compromise. We compromise every single day. And I think that we're sort of being ignored and overlooked as discussion, you know, is wrapped around this sort of incoming deadline of August 1st midnight. We understand that there, you know, obviously there have to be compromises. Obviously there has to be some concessions. But come on, let's sort of keep this in proper perspective in terms of what we cost the government in relation to the services we provide. Versus, I haven't heard anybody speaking about cutting back on foreign aid. I wish that was addressed in this dialogue.
Hey, we're going to stop now for a short break. We're listening to John Adler, the president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. This is Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that Geico now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. Now this is big news, but that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact Geico. Tell him, Mike.
Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk, and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tony Vernetti, and I'm here with my co-host, Bill Bransford. And today we're joined by John Adler, the president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. If you have a question or a comment about our show today, please give us a call. Our toll-free number is 1-877-936-9333. Or you can always email us a question at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Shifting gears a little bit with some of your legislative issues that FLIOA is dealing with. I know that there's a bill out there called the National Blue Alert. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was a very common sense bill, very refreshing to see something like that come out that can't get bogged down in partisan pettiness. It was introduced by Congressman Mike Grimm. Mike Grimm was a former FBI agent, congressman in New York out of Staten Island. And, you know, he experienced this during his career as a special agent with the Bureau. The definite need to create a national blue alert, which is sort of like an all points bulletin, in the event a law enforcement officer, local, state, federal, you know, is attacked, sustains injury, or is killed. We need to have a network established where we could communicate effectively so that all law enforcement components could be involved and effectively pursue and capture those involved in that sort of attack, you know, quickly. So I think it's one of those things where you kind of look back and say, well, yeah, why hasn't this already been done? Well, unfortunately, many important things get overlooked, you know, and just in the shoot and run offense of life. So he introduced it on the House side. 365 is the bill number. And on the Senate side, Senator Cardin introduced the sister or the companion bill, 657, which I believe actually was in markup in the Judiciary Committee yesterday. And in light of the fact that I've been involved in many other things, I don't have a status on that, but I suspect it moved forward with favor. So we're sort of hoping that, you know, aside from all the heated debate and tension regarding the deficit ceiling and the pay issues, that Congress does come together, recognize the importance of this bill, and move it forward so we can quickly establish this network that would help, you know, improve officer safety and our means to capture those who wish to do us or who do us harm.
Well, it's sort of like an Amber Alert for law enforcement. And I got a question about the cost, because you said you first thing that hits you is we're not doing this already. You know, they you have a variety of ways. I imagine that there shouldn't be a huge cost associated with this. It's, you know, it could just be a way of pooling resources together, because I'm sure we're doing a lot of this in some capacity, and maybe it's just about, you know, opening the lines of communication between various agencies.
No, Tony, you hit it on the head with the comparison to Amber Alert, and that's exactly what it is. This would be, in effect, a blue alert, and the same manner in which we can somehow communicate effectively to all law enforcement components when an Amber Alert situation takes place in any geographically defined area, we should be able to do the same. And you're right, we do have the technological means. It's simply a matter of putting the system in play.
So John, in the past 10 years since 9/11, federal law enforcement has grown tremendously. And you said you have 26,000 members. I would imagine there's probably some federal law enforcement people that haven't yet joined FLEOA. If they're listening, how do they join? How do they learn more about FLEOA?
Our website, which is a good means to sort of stay current with a lot of the issues we're working on, is FLEOA, the acronym, Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. That's FLEOA.org. You can go right online there. We have a means for which you can join online. You can also call our member services at 717-938-2300. But what I'd recommend is, you know, go on our website, take a look, look under the navigation bar for legislative, look under the navigation bar for press, look under the blue box, which is labeled top headlines. It'll give you an idea of, you know, a lot of the things we're working on and how it impacts everyone in federal law enforcement, not just a select few. And I think what I would just appeal to those out there who aren't members, you know, or you know, whether they're not a member of FLEOA or they don't have Fed's liability insurance, what I tell them is that you're sort of operating with great peril. You know, I'll pray for you and hope you make it to the finish line without being sued, without getting involved in an adverse action. But unfortunately, we're living in a world where things aren't that simple. You know, 1/3 of our membership has, you know, had occasion to call upon our legal services for assistance. And you don't, you know, good people get involved in these circumstances every day. I've been sued 6 times, one of which was for excessive force where I never touched someone. See, you're not, you know, you can go out and wear a bulletproof vest to minimize your chances of sustaining injury from a bullet. You don't have a bulletproof vest from getting sued or getting accused.
If you discharge your weapon, chances are you're going to be investigated, even if you were entirely justified.
Right, and we're averaging right now, Bill, I think anywhere from 6 to 7, 8 days, we're averaging one shooting, and within the line of duty, and good shoot. I mean, situations where we are required or the circumstances would dictate discharging the firearm. But when it happens, you still need to have counsel. It's, you know, it's a very difficult circumstance to be in. And I'm not suggesting that the agencies are out to get our guys. They're not. The agencies, for the most part, are good when our members or law enforcement involved in shootings. It's the other issues, Bill, more so the adverse actions. You know, the allegations of wrongdoing, misuse of the government vehicle, misuse of government equipment, candor issues, accusing an agent or an officer of lying or making a false statement or withholding information. A non-disclosure can be as harmful as a false statement. And you really need to have access to legal counsel when you're accused of something like this.
And just to comment, you know, a little bit of that from an outsider on a couple of things. The shooting, you know, incident is a huge benefit that FLEOA provides for their members to have access to that legal hotline. They're able to get a lawyer right away because there's tremendous, you know, you're right, the agency's not out to get them. State and locals are not out to get them. But you've just gone through a very traumatic event. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty. You have a lot of questions. What am I supposed to do? They're telling me I do this, this, or this. And it's good to have, you know, somebody who's objective, an attorney that can immediately answer those questions. And, you know, your general counsel, Larry Berger, and his staff do a wonderful job. You know, and obviously the legal services is the substantive benefit, you know, that FLEOA offers its membership, and and that's wonderful. What I want to emphasize for those special agents out there, 1811s who are not FLEOA members, is that, you know, you get a tremendous amount of advocacy on Capitol Hill throughout the administration with your FLEOA leadership. And, you know, I work with a lot of federal employee associations in my job, and, you know, you guys are number one out there getting the attention of those people. And one of the reasons are, you know, not so much, you know, obviously your hard work and dedication of you and your staff, but, you know, there's strength in numbers. There's a reason, you know, we collectively bargain. You get collective,
but
you know, people.
FLEOA is not a union. You don't.
It's not a union, but the collective. What I'm trying to say is the collective voice is stronger than the single voice. So the more members you have, the more clout you're going to have to get some of these issues, you know, through to Congress or in the administration. And so while some folks may say, look, I get those advocacy benefits anyway, FLEOA is going to always argue these issues. I don't have to pay the dues. What are they, $105 or, you know, 100 and change, whatever they are now.
$5 biweekly.
Right. It's around the golf, you know, a happy hour for a lot of these guys. You know, just sitting back and thinking you're going to get the benefit, you're doing your job a disservice. You know, you really should join. Let's increase the numbers because you will get more done.
So, John, I asked that question because I think there has been a significant increase in law enforcement in the last 10 years, and we are coming up on the anniversary of September 11th in just a month and a half. Are you recognizing that in some way? Are you doing anything about that?
Well, yeah. Bill, that's a good question. It's personal for me, and it's professional. Personal in that I was a first responder at 9/11 down in Manhattan. So, you know, it holds certain memories for me, you know, separate from my role within FLEOA. Within the law enforcement context, yes, you know, we have a variety of law enforcement organizations that are going to be hosting functions to honor those 72 law enforcement officers who made the ultimate sacrifice on 9/11. In addition to serving on the executive board of FLEOA, I also serve on the executive board of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. And on September 9th at the Law Enforcement Memorial down by Judiciary Square, the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial will be holding a ceremony at 11 o'clock. A very nice ceremony to recognize and again honor all those who gave their lives on that fatal day. So I recommend anybody in the D.C. area, please come on down. You know, Craig Floyd, the chairman of the memorial, will deliver his passionate words as he always does in supporting and recognizing the sacrifices that have been made by those willing to wear the badge. In addition to that, there'll be other events. There'll be events obviously held down at Ground Zero in Manhattan beginning Friday, September 9th through the weekend. I believe this year, September 11th falls on a Sunday. So, you know, I sort of appeal to everyone out there to take pause. Don't take your liberties for granted. Please take a moment. Think about those who did lose their lives on 9/11. Give some thought about those who continue to embrace the risk. And please understand that all these things we enjoy does come with a price, and sometimes the brave men and women in law enforcement pay that price and do make the ultimate sacrifice.
And talking about the law enforcement memorial, I pulled this email off quickly before I was heading out to the show that I got from Craig Floyd that I get monthly, just about, you know, the updates. There were 98 officers in America killed in the line of duty during the first half of 2011. That's a 14% increase over the 86 that we had, you know, last year. So we had a surge last year in 2010, and it looks like, you know, that is happening again. The only bright spot, you know, I think in the information that I got from Craig is that traffic-related fatalities are down. But unfortunately, firearm-related deaths, you know, are up 33% compared to last year.
Well, not only that, Tony, you know, historically, I'd say, you know, post 9/11, the number of vehicular-related deaths was always the number one cause, and gunfire was second. And this year, gunfire remains the number one cause of death for law enforcement officers. That's a tremendous concern for us, but it kind of cuts back to, you know, in sort of closing the circle, my comments earlier about not funding all law enforcement components properly and the increase of risk that we unfortunately have to embrace.
And if for no other reason, people should support the Law Enforcement Memorial, is because I just heard Clint Eastwood has taken on the role as honorary chairman.
Yes, we're very excited about that. You know, Clint is an icon for us, and the fact that he has stepped up to be the chairman of the National Law Enforcement Officers Museum, which we are hoping to have fully erected within 3 years. Of course, we still need a lot of contributions. And one thing also I'd like to point out, on October 12th, we're going to have our second annual museum gala, which is going to be a very formal, a wonderful social event where we're going to have Richard Belzer from Law & Order, SVU, MC. We'll have other celebrities there. We're going to honor Dick Wolf, the creator of Law & Order. The function itself is going to help us raise money to get that National Law Enforcement Museum built. And I encourage everyone to go to the memorial website. It's lawmemorial.org. To learn more about the event and how you can secure your place, get tickets, and come on down and have a great time and mingle with a bunch of great people for a great cause. One more event on October 16th. We're also going to have a law enforcement ride and run to remember, which is going to be a fun community event. It's going to involve bicycle riding, you know, running, or for those like myself who sort of excel at just simply walking, you can walk. But it's a good opportunity to bring law enforcement and the community together to raise awareness and contributions, again, for both the museum and the National Law Enforcement Memorial.
We're talking about the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. Our guest is John Adler, the president of FLEOA. This is Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum. But there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good, which brings me to the big news. GEICO now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing, or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. So no matter if you're blue or red, or in my case, green. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, contact GEICO and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I am Tony Vernetti, and I'm here with my co-host, Bill Bransford, and we are entering our last segment of the show. Of course, we have John Adler, the president of FLEOA, the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. If you have a question or comment for John, you can give us a call. Our number is 1-877-936-9333. Or you can email us your question at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. John, when we introduced FLEOA, you talked a little bit about the chapters across the country. I was wondering if you can just give us a little bit more, you know, insight, how you come up with these legislative issues, how you make sure, you know, everyone's voice, you know, is sort of heard. I know not only do you have chapters throughout the country, I know you have agency presidents, you have, you know, each agency that has 1811 special agents, there's an agency representative, and, you know, they liaison with your legislative people. Tell us a little bit about that, and I know you have a national conference coming up in November.
Yes. Yeah, we're structured in a way where we have, you know, I mentioned earlier, 26,000 members come from 65 different agencies. So for each agency, we have a person who's elected by the FLEOA members in that agency to function as the agency president. And that person serves as the liaison between that agency's members and the executive board to ensure that we are kept up to speed in terms of issues that impact that particular agency. And, you know, Tony, as you mentioned earlier, we pride ourselves on establishing open lines of communications with the various agency directors and cabinet officials. You know, we've enjoyed a very open relationship with Secretary Napolitano and Attorney General Holder. And, you know, whether we agree or disagree on every issue, the fact that they are receptive and willing to listen is a tremendous opportunity for us to ensure that the concerns of our members, the boots on the ground, in effect, are heard and considered. You know, we have the Federal Law Enforcement, the Department of Homeland Security Federal Law Enforcement Advisory Board, which meets quarterly, and it gives us an opportunity to bring together the different components under Homeland Security and bring these issues to the attention of the Secretary, who, again, has been very receptive to our issues. On the chapter front, we have chapter presidents, which are, the chapters are geographically defined, similar to lodges across the country. And, you know, it's an effective way, Tony, for us to communicate with our members during these various chapter events. And alternatively, or concurrent with that, our chapter offices can listen to the concerns, you know, during the social events or charitable events. But it's important that we stay in touch with our membership. Otherwise, how do we base, you know, what we're going to advocate for if we're not in touch with their concerns?
And all important reasons to join FLEOA.
Absolutely.
I assume you have to be federal law enforcement to join FLEOA.
Yes, although, Bill, good question. We do have, you know, a growing retired membership. You know, we encourage anyone who retires as a federal law enforcement officer to consider joining FLEOA. It's half the regular member price, but you continue to have access to legal counsel. And in light of the passage of the Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act first in 2004 and then amended in 2010, I encourage you to join as a retired member. It's the best price in town. And if you do carry by virtue of LEOSA, you're going to want to have access to an attorney in the event a situation happens. LEOSA is the acronym for the Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act.
And when you say carry, you mean carry a
firearm, right.
Essentially, what this law is it gives both active federal, state, and locals and retired federal, state, and local police officers who qualify the authority to carry a firearm concealed, notwithstanding state law.
Yes. So, you know, I just, you know, to, and then also we have an associate member category for those who are supportive of the law enforcement mission. They can also join at a reduced price. And then we have a membership, a resign membership for those who move on from law enforcement, don't necessarily stay till retirement, but for a variety of reasons, leave prior to reaching that 20-year point. So we do have a diverse membership, although obviously the thrust of what we do in terms of advocating is focusing on those active federal law enforcement issues. Now, we're not a lobbying entity. What we do is we try and educate members of Congress. And as Tony alluded to with his question and comments before, what we try and do is encourage our memberships in these particular areas to express their views, to interact with their congressman, with their senator. You know, the silent person isn't heard. And you can't sort of expect any sort of, you know, telepathy to occur where your congressman is going to automatically understand what's important to you. So we sort of help them structure things to, you know, and help them to sort of connect the dots to ensure that their rights as a constituent are used and they don't simply sit back and fold their arms and watch the news and not do anything proactive to help us move these important issues forward.
Yeah, that's very important for people to realize that if your member of Congress doesn't hear from you, he or she will assume that you're just happy with the status quo.
Correct.
And most of us are not, quite frankly, as we look at the way things are unfolding.
Yeah, Tony mentioned also we have a national conference coming up in November. We're very excited about that. One of the exciting things about our national conference is we hold an awards banquet, formal banquet, where we recognize our Heroism and Bravery Award recipients. One of those winners this year will be Will Clark, my good friend, an exceptional hero for America. Will is the ATF agent who was involved in an off-duty shooting in the Virgin Islands and was wrongfully, as they attempted to wrongfully prosecute him for his heroic response to save a woman who was a domestic violence victim. But that fortunately worked out, and I'm looking forward to honoring Will Clark for his heroic conduct. He's a great man and a great representative for ATF. We're going to have, I was remiss before, we were talking about Clint Eastwood, Vincent D'Onofrio, the renowned actor on Law and Order, Criminal Intent, has been a great supporter of ours. Vince will probably be there as well, in addition to serving during Police Week as one of the, you know, the leaders for us at the variety of events that took place during May, during National Police Week. And we're looking forward to seeing Vince and just enjoying some camaraderie as well.
You left me out. You know I'm going to be there, too.
Of course. Well, we save the best for last. And Tony Vernetti, you know, all kidding aside, you know, Tony has been a great friend of FLEOA. He's been a great friend of mine personally, provided counsel, and it's nice to know an attorney who will provide counsel and not bill you for it. And, you know, Tony has been just an absolute champion for us, for our membership. Obviously, he's the, you know, the proponent or the executive of Fed's liability. And, you know, I don't need to even endorse it because – both Tony and his customer service speaks for itself. And one of the defining things for Tony in anything he does is the manner in which he communicates, his sincerity, his passion. And certainly in this case, you know, he's been great for our membership. And, you know, we're glad to have Tony as a friend. Tony's going to be there at our national conference. He supports us. He'll be there just to, you know, in his representative mode within Feds. But I'll also have Tony speak to our members during the conference because he typically has important things to say. And he's been a time-proven advocate for federal law enforcement officers.
Well, here's the $1 I promised for that plug. Talk a little bit about your FLIOA Foundation. That's something we never get a chance to talk about, but that's you guys do wonderful work there, and it's, you know, another benefit you're able to give to your members.
Yeah, thanks, you know, Tony, it's great. I'm glad you raised that. Bob Van Etten, who was the first national president of FLIOA, outstanding human being, he is the president for the FLIOA Foundation. Our foundation exists for one purpose, to raise money to provide our members and their families who are in dire need of financial assistance, either when one of our members is killed in the line of duty, sustains serious bodily injury, or becomes medically ill. Our foundation is right there. And unlike, you know, the PSOB, which the Public Safety Officer Benefit Program and other programs which do provide great services, they're administrative mountains to climb. In the case of our foundation, they function as a 911 first responder when one of our members needs help. Bob Van Etten, Tom Casey, John Bannon, and a group of people there have done phenomenal work. They are literally a phone call away, an email away for coming to the rescue. And I encourage all of you, you know, the FLIOA Foundation is in the combined federal campaign we call CFC in the federal government program, which comes out once a year in that September-October range, where government employees, you know, get to choose from a variety of wonderful charities to contribute to. And I encourage everyone in federal law enforcement, or even if you're not in federal law enforcement, because if you contribute to the FLIOA Foundation, you're assured your money is going to good use. It's not going to, you know, a whiskey and hors d'oeuvre party. It's going to those who go out there and do everything to keep our America, our country safe.
So, John, we have like a minute or two left. Do you have any other items on your legislative agenda that concern law enforcement that you'd like the listeners to hear about?
You know, I mean, just I'll throw in is one more. I mean, we're always working or involved in a variety of legislative bills. Senate Bill 890 put out by Chairman Leahy. I say Chairman Leahy because it sort of connects with the Senate Judiciary Committee. The Fighting Fraud to Protect Taxpayers Act. I mean, this legislative proposal would allow the Justice Department to keep approximately $15 million that it collects each year in fines and penalties and reinvest those dollars in investigating, prosecuting, and litigating fraud cases. You know, and that's a very important thing, obviously, in light of the budget crisis we're under. That's another common sense piece of legislation that I hope will hopefully move forward. You know, and then we have the Federal Law Enforcement Recruitment and Retention Act of 2011, which is also, you know, it's an important legislative vehicle to recognize.
Have you seen difficulty in recruiting quality federal law enforcement?
Sure. I mean, obviously, you know, Bill, you know, you think about people who want to get involved and they sit back and they read everything that's coming out in the news every day and they're scratching in their head saying, hey, maybe I should rethink law school or medical school or, you know, or go out there and get involved in some sort of business or corporate occupation.
Or the pay at state for state and local law enforcement is becoming more and more competitive
the
as
pension,
well.
Tony.
When you add in overtime, the pension, you're right.
Yeah, the pension and all certainly the line of duty or disability benefits, which is another avenue we continue to work on, which is trying to enhance the, you know, the services provided to those who sustain injury in the line of duty, working closely with the Department of Labor, OWCP, which is Office of Workers' Compensation.
Which is a program coming under reform right now.
Yes. Yes. So we're involved with that, making sure that our members and our concerns are being represented. We've made a lot of positive strides working with them, the Federal Employee Compensation Group within DOL. But we continue to be engaged. And as we said, if you're not there, you're not heard, nothing happens.
Well, John, it's really good to have you on Fed Talk this morning. One more time, real quick, how can somebody join FLIOA if they're not yet a member?
Please go to the website. That's FLIOA.org.
All right. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. It's great to have John Adler. John, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Tony.
And just as a reminder, Fed Talk is brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Have a great weekend.